The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trouble. Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline.
We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings.
It's Farrell on the bench.
I believe in whipped cream with everything. It's Farrell on the bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out the bad seat, broken head, bad apple, what a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad actors, bad taste, bad law, bad dude, bad breath, bad attitude, bad vibes. We are live in the Farrell Appalachia, right across the river and through the woods from where Granny loves her 20% orange daiquiri hybrid when she's drinking shots of JMO in New York City. The Big Apple, ooh. People dressed in plastic bags, they're written in traffic, some kind of fashion shake it up, should do be. All my friends that come around, flat to party up. Rats on the west side, bedbugs uptown. What a mess, this town's a tatter. My brains splattered all over Manhattan, should be shake out. Ooh. Hey, what's gigging? It's Farrell with Carver High tonight. And 844 toll free, 843-6879 is the number if you want to call in. And I got to tell you, I was watching that great game, Indiana and Florida State tonight. I don't know. Did you watch that game, Carver High?
I caught the end of it, the overtime.
Okay. Well, obviously, Florida State won the game by a bucket. Indiana was getting three. I hit the spread. But I got to tell you, there were two calls, and one of them was in overtime, and you saw it. You have got to be kidding me. With 6 seconds left in the game, when you saw Indiana steal the inbounds pass and the kid called timeout, are you going to tell me that kid didn't call timeout before he fell out of bounds?
Awful call by the officials. Couldn't understand it. Just awful call.
It was an awful call. Like, how can you stand 10 feet away from the kid and he looks right in your face and calls timeout with the ball in his hand and you say he didn't call timeout? He did not say that he was falling out of bounds. He said he never called timeout. You can't even argue it.
Makes absolutely. We do this every night. We watch these games. It doesn't matter if it's college basketball, the NFL, hockey, baseball. Every night you have another idiot official that has no idea what they're doing or how to do their job, and they wreck games. And they,
okay,
you got
so
that again.
When you're watching the game and the kid steals the ball with 6 seconds left in overtime, and he steals the inbounds pass, that is a gigantic defensive effort. That is a great play by the kid. He cut in front of the pass, stole the ball cleanly, and called timeout, and then fell out of bounds. And the ref said he never called timeout. And Archie Miller almost had an absolute double coronary on the bench. Did you see him react? Like, he came all the way out on the court to half court. He was screaming. How bad was that call? That was so bad.
Arch was pretty unhappy.
Now listen, that was bad. But there was one other call in the game that bothered me in the second half, and you didn't see it. But it was in the second half with about, I'd say, 8 minutes left in the game, something like that, right? It was a really tight game, 14 lead changes. I guess 14 ties and 9 lead changes, something like that. It was crazy. So anyway, what happened was that Indiana guard drove the baseline, went underneath the basket, went to pass the ball, and it was deflected as plain as day by Florida State. We welcome in all of our radio affiliates everywhere, and top to bottom, east to west, you name it, north, south. Here's the deal. We're on Mightier 1090 in San Diego and Lipstick City, all of Orange County, everywhere, LA, you name it, up and down California, all the way to Canada, for Christ's sakes. And then January 7th, we take over channel 204 on Sirius XM, which is the Sports Grid Radio Network, coming soon in less than a few weeks. All right, so the ball's under the basket. He's driving. He throws it, tries to pass to a player in the corner when he's driving the left baseline. Coming around underneath the basket, he's in trouble. There's three defenders there. He throws it. They deflect it as clear as day. The ball is deflected up in the air, hits the bottom of the backboard, and goes out of bounds, directly underneath the basket. And the ref under the basket, he literally is standing right there 2 feet away. He calls it Indiana ball, and then the ref, from 30 feet away up on the top of the wing, he came running down from 30 feet away and said they never deflected it. And Archie Miller, I thought his heart was going to jump out of his chest and fly away like a bird. I thought his heart was going to come out of his chest and fly away. That's how mad he was. It was such a terrible call that my problem with it wasn't that they made the call. My problem was that the guy that made the call made the right call, and then his fat-ass loser colleague, whatever you want to call him, there's three refs, two on the wings, one under the basket. The guy 30 feet away at the top of the wing, he came running down and said they didn't deflect it. For Christ's sakes, how do you make that call from 25 feet away when the guy that's standing right on top of the play called it right? Even Jay Billis said it was a terrible call. He said, how do you let the guy on the wing make that call after the guy under the basket who's on the play 2 feet away from it makes the call? And then they give the ball to effing Florida State. They go down and hit a three. I mean, you got to be effing kidding watching these crappy refs just ruin games. I mean, kiss my ass.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
All right, Pharrell on the bench. So later, Rich Hammond from The Athletic in Los Angeles talking about the Rams Patriots on the bench this hour. So listen, Florida State won the game, fair and square. No problem there. The kid, the freshman, ended up hitting a three on the wing that was huge. And then with the game tied after Trace Jackson had hit two gigantic free throws with 8 seconds left, they went down, and this is in overtime, at the end of overtime. They went down, and the same freshman hit a Euro step kiss off the glass, high off the corner of the glass and in. No foul, just made it. And then Indiana had 2 seconds to go the length of the court, and they got a half-court shot and airballed it. But they lost fair and square. But, you know, in terms of the play, I thought Indiana lost the game. I thought in terms of the refs, I thought that they handed the game to Florida State. They got every call. And those two calls were so egregious, so bad. The two calls that I described, the deflection under the Indiana basket that went out of bounds off Florida State, that they gave the ball to Florida State on a reverse call. The guy got it right. He called it Indiana ball, and then his ref partner came running up from 30 feet away and said there was no deflection, and the entire world saw it as a deflection. And everyone in the arena saw it. All the players saw it. They were laughing. They were laughing at the refs. That's how bad the call was. They were laughing at them. When you know you suck, when the players are and the coaches are screaming at you and the players are all laughing at you because you're so fat and stupid and you can't make the right call, and you get some other jackass runs in and flips the call. One guy makes the call. How is it that a guy from 30 feet away supersedes the guy that's 2 feet away? Explain that to me, Carver High. The guy that makes the call 2 feet away should be the only call made. You should not reverse the call of a ref that made the call from 2 feet away. For what reason in the world can you give me that a ref from 25 feet away can run and flip that call and tell the guy under the basket? And Bill has said it. He said, what's he say to him? He didn't deflect it. And then the guy underneath goes, yeah, he did. I saw him deflect it. No, he didn't. Give Florida State the ball. They go down and hit a three. I mean, you gotta be effing kidding me. And then that was so bad. Even Bill has talked about it for 5 minutes. And then the call, oh my God, the inbound steal with 6 seconds left at the end of regulation, and he called timeout. Indiana would have had the last shot with 6.6 seconds left, and they never got it because the ref is such a candy-ass, fat-ass. I mean, dude, it was the same effing ref, too. How corrupt is this ref? I hope he gets COVID. And I mean it. I can't even watch. I can't even watch sports anymore because the refs are so terrible. I mean, where do they find these people? In Ethiopia? Do they know anything about basketball? Honest to Christ, I would have been double-teched and thrown out of that game if I was the coach. I would have been double-teched like Bob Knight and thrown out of that game so fast. And Archie Miller was losing his mind watching the game, and they never teched him up. You know why? Because they know how bad they suck. They know how bad they did at their job. They never tech up the coach that's mad when they know they suck at their job. I'm telling you. I know. I played the game for 40 years. Refs tech up people that have an attitude problem or are filthy, foul-mouthed, or blatantly offensive toward the ref, right? They don't tech them up when they're wrong. They don't tech them up when the refs know they've screwed up. They just let them scream and yell, and they go down and let Florida State hit threes. Indiana should have had the ball with 6 seconds left on the steal and timeout. The kid called timeout. There isn't a person. Even Helen Keller saw it. Helen Keller saw the kid call timeout. The whole world saw it. You know, that's the problem, is that you got the game on national television, so we know, we're all watching how much of an asshat you are. We're all watching how terrible you are at your job. Thank God I don't know either one of the three of their names. Thank God I don't know their names, because I would be saying their names right now on the air, crucifying them on the cross with nails in their hands. And they were so bad with their just terrible and game deciding calls. The game was back and forth. Every single possession mattered. Every single touch mattered. Every single shot mattered. Every single free throw mattered. And they made those two terrible calls. It was so bad. I mean, if I'm wrong, then why did Billis talk about both calls? Both calls were so wrong, he spent 5 minutes talking about how bad the calls were because they were so bad. And I still hit the bet. I still hit Indiana +3. But you know what? I was so mad watching the game with the refs that, like, I was so mad, I didn't even want to do the show tonight. Carver, I was livid. I'm still livid. I honestly, there's nothing I hate more in life, honestly, than refs. They're the worst people. I like Donald Trump more than I like refs. I can't stand refs. I honestly hate them all dead, all of them, because they suck so bad at their jobs. I hope you're listening right now, too. You candy-ass, crappy-ass refs down in Tallahassee. Nice job tonight, you fat-ass losers, hack-ass refs. You're terrible at your job. You suck. Don't even tell me I'm wrong, Carver High. You saw the overtime timeout call and the steal out of bounds. You know I'm right. Everyone knows I'm right, because if you watch the game, you know both calls were crap. Everyone knows. Everyone knows how bad they were. Meanwhile, they're celebrating the great shot by the freshman. And then the highlights, all they do is show the highlights of Florida State's great plays and great shots instead of calling the game for exactly what happened. They screwed them twice on gigantic possessions, screwed them, cost them the game. It cost him the game. And like I said, I repeat for the fifth time, I still hit the bet. I still won the money. So kiss my ass. I don't care. I won the bet. So cash the ticket. Give me the money. That's fine. The refs couldn't stop me from making my money, even though they tried everything in their power to give Florida State that game, you know, multiple times. Absolute bullshack. I sat and watched that game. Made me sick to my stomach.
So you won't be sending any Christmas cards to the officiating crew in Tallahassee?
I'll send Christmas cards on fire to their house.
Okay. You know what bothers me? Here's the thing that bothers me about it. And like these games now, the college basketball games, all the games, like they'll delay games for several minutes at a time to go and look at the dopey television. Review every little call down to the second, and they still, you know, even with stuff like that, they still don't get it right. I'm just talking in general, all plays, and they still half the time don't get them right. You got guys making calls from 50 feet away. Get together and talk about it. Go look at it on the screen until you get it right. Do whatever you have to do, but man, they really are bad. There's just no way around it. They stink, like you say. You're obviously a little bit more hatred towards them tonight.
Listen,
you were right. It was awful. It was a brutal, brutal job by that crew tonight in Tallahassee.
Oh my God! And listen, you know what bothers me is that people are, you know, listening, or the church, whoever, you know, they're like, this guy's crazy. You know what? I am crazy, and that's been established 35 years ago and ongoing, the saga of my insanity. But let me tell you something. I'm not wrong at all. Zero. There's not one chance in the world that I'm wrong on either call. And the problem I have is we're in the third week of the college basketball season. They haven't even started playing conference games or, like, you know, really, you know, big games or anything. They're just having, you know, holiday tournaments and big ACC, Big Ten tournament, you know, like, you know, classics and stuff like this. And imagine how bad they get later in the season.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, for all on a bench. So my problem is that it gets worse as the season goes along, in my opinion. I mean, you would think, in my view, that early on in the season that they would have some, you know, ring rust. In other words, they would be less sharp about their calls because they never played basketball last year, right? They canceled the season at the conference championship week, and they never played again, right? Now they're playing again a season later, and you'd think, you know, you got to give them some space to get into a rhythm, right? You got to, you know, lay off of the refs, let them get their game back and their cardio back and their calls back and their timing back, right? Fair enough. So I'm down with that. Like, I respect that. I don't have a problem with that. But then, you know, here we are in these big games, right? Is that what they are? They are, right? ACC, Big Ten, Challenger, all big games, right? Big East, Big 12, those are all big games, right? Are they not big games? So this is a big game. And here's the best game of the night, going back and forth. And, like, I don't know. I can't remember if it was 14 ties and 9 lead changes, whatever it was. I think that's what it was. 14 ties, 9 lead changes before overtime, right? Like, so that's what I thought it was. But then to have these two calls that were so game-changing that I just can't – I just can't take it. I just – there's no way I can absorb that and live with it. I just – I knew that – literally, I knew that they were going to lose the game because of the calls. And I also knew that the only thing that mattered to me at the point of no return was that I'd cover the 3-point spread. I didn't care about anything else because I knew the refs were giving Florida State the game. No one that watched that game can argue with either call because they were both so bad and they were so obvious. Because the difference is that the refs don't know what we're watching on national television, right? They're in the moment. They're on the court. They're making the calls. And the game's fast. I get it. They make mistakes. Fair enough. But I have a problem. I have a massive problem. So does Billis. He said it. The ref on the wing should not be allowed to reverse the call unless the ref under the basket doesn't know the answer. Do you understand? Carver High, if the guy under the effing basket knows that they deflected the ball out of bounds, it hit two Florida State players, one in the hand and one on the leg, going out of bounds, right? And he saw both deflection and the ball bouncing off of them. And it was obvious to everyone. They started laughing at him when the ref came down from the wing and changed the call. He said there was no deflection. The ref under the basket should not be reversed unless he asks for the decision to be made by the wing ref because he doesn't know the answer. Do you understand where I'm coming from? If he made the call and saw the deflection, because that's what Bill has said. He goes, what's he going to say? He did deflect it. No, he didn't. Yes, he did. I saw it. No, he didn't. Reverse the call. They go down and hit a three. I'm like, what in the effing mother Varellin? Are you effing kidding me? And I'm sitting there. And all I'm saying is you cannot reverse the call of a ref that saw the call and made the call, the correct call, and then you reverse it because what? Give me a reason why he reversed the call from 25 feet away. Why do you get involved? I have told you on this show, do you remember we used to do For All in Events, right? And we were doing the show at CBS. And how many times did I tell you that there was this fat ref that used to make calls in my league from, like, the other end of the effing court? the other end of the court. We were at the other end making down in the low block. I'm driving for a layup on the baseline. And the ref makes the call from past half court. He's on the other end of the floor. He's so fat and slow and old, he can't run. And he blows a whistle and calls a foul from 60 feet away. And I'm like, what are you doing, bro? You can't even get up the court, you fat ass. And then he texts me up. And right, do you remember when I did the show? I'm like, I got some guy making calls from 60 feet away in a playoff championship game from 60 feet away. No ref from 30 feet away on the wing should be allowed to make a call on a ref under the basket that makes a call, that made the correct call, that saw the deflection and knew that it went off of Florida State. And he lets the guy on the wing 30 feet away come down and change his mind. That's the problem. That is the issue. That is the bad call. And strike me dead right now if I'm wrong, because even Jay Duke Billis knew. He spent 5 minutes talking about how bad it was. And I don't care what he thinks either. How's that sound? But he was right because I was right. I saw it. You saw it. The whole world saw it. Everyone that watched on national television saw it. And it's because refs suck that they let some ref from 30 feet away make a change to a call that was made correctly. And Bill's like, how do you change the ref's call that made the right call? How do you do that? He's like, what is wrong with basketball? This is what's wrong with basketball. That's what's wrong. There's too many refs on the floor. They got three refs on the floor in a college basketball game. How about one on the wing, one under the basket? Get rid of the fat-ass hack third ref. Jesus Christ. And you know what else? It's the same thing in hockey. They got too many guys on the ice. Too many guys on the ice. You know why, Carver? You can't even argue it. They're in the way is what they are. They're always in the way, and there's too many of them making calls. Back in the day, they had two linesmen and a ref. What was wrong with that? In UEFA, in the Champions League, in the Premier League, in the MLS, they have one ref. Two linesmen, right? Why does basketball have to have three refs? You wonder why the games are so bad. It's because three refs sit there and try to be famous. That's Scott, what's his name? The NBA ref. He's the worst. I can't even take him. He's so bad. I can't think of his last name in the moment. But Scott Foster. There it is. Boom. I remember. Do you know why? Because he sucked so bad. I remember. That's why. I got early Alzheimer's, and I still remember because he's such a crappy ref. You know why? Because he wants to be famous. He likes being famous on ESPN, making crappy calls all the time. He loves being the center of attention in NBA games. Meanwhile, he sucks. Too many refs.
Got a lot of MLB umpires who like to do that, too.
Oh, Jesus. How many umps they got? How many umps they got in a baseball playoff game? 15? They got one at home plate, first, second, third, left field line, right field line. Is that right?
They're everywhere.
I don't need that many refs. I don't need that many umps. Thank you very much. And the ref, the same ref under the basket at the other end, the one that let that guy change his mind, the same ref. No, the guy that was the wing ref that came down and changed the mind of the ref, the one that ran down and changed his mind was on the other end under the basket that made the miss on the Indiana timeout call on the steal. And meanwhile, Billis, again, that was a steal. He called timeout. It should be Indiana's ball with 6 seconds left, period. No questions asked. Meanwhile, they give it to Florida State, and they get the last shot. They missed, and the game went to overtime, right? They should have never got the last shot because it was Indiana's ball with 6 seconds left after the steal and timeout call. And they had three timeouts left, and they still didn't give him the call. I'm just telling you, without a doubt, the refs tonight in Tallahassee were corrupt. The game was fixed. That's it. I mean, there's no explanation for it. The calls were so bad and so egregious that instead of talking about a great game, Jay Billis was talking about crappy calls the whole night. Boom. That's it. Period. End of discussion. I'm done with it. So, you know what? Kiss my ass. Thanks for the free money when I hit the three spread with Indiana. Because I'm sure they wanted to screw that up, too. I'm sure the ref had money on the game. So But that was obvious to me. The ref had money on the game, so that didn't work out for him. Indiana covered. They did everything in their power to give Florida State that game, and there's no getting around it. I don't even care. I even said this, right? I said earlier, Florida State won the game fair and square. The players. Freshman hit the three, hit the winner off the glass on a Euro step drive, got a high kiss. Game over. You win. You deserve it. Nice job. But no way am I saying that game wasn't corrupt. No way am I saying that the refs didn't ruin that game. They ruined it. It was an abortion. Absolute abortion. I've never seen anything worse. You know, it was so obvious to me. Like, I'm sitting there watching it going, oh, my God. Oh, my God. You should have heard my language coming out of my house. My dog ran. My wife left. My kids, they don't even talk to me for like 2-3 days. Because I'm like, I was spazzing out watching it because the refs were so bad. And then my son came down and watched it. He saw the play with the timeout that Carver High saw. And he said, he saw it once. I saw it 30 times. They showed it 30 times. You saw it, Carver High. They must have showed it 30 times because it was so bad. But my son saw it once. And he went, that's a steal and a timeout. Boom. And he saw it once. He had no idea about the call. I said, watch this play. Tell me what happens. He goes, the kid stole the ball, called timeout. It was that simple. And instead of that, no. Florida State ball, no timeout. I was like, what? What is happening here? It was so corrupt. I was just sitting there. I wanted to vomit. The ACC and Big Ten, whoever the refs were, should be ashamed of themselves. You're amateurs. You should be fired. You should not be allowed to ref games. You should be refing girls' middle school basketball. That's it. Because that's where they put all the crappy refs. Trust me. Thank God for me, too, because without me, who would ever say it? Who would ever have the stones to just call them out and wish death on them? They're so bad, the refs. They're so corrupt. Screw you. I hope you have a miserable Christmas. You rat ass. All right, for all on the bench, Rich Hammond with The Athletic and Lipstick City joins us on the Mahogany, waxing up, getting ready for the Rams and Pats on Thursday night, tomorrow night in L.A. at SoFi. What a gorgeous stadium it is. Hey, Rich, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy New Year. If I don't see you, get you back on soon. I just want to get all those holiday cheers and wishes out to you.
Hey, back at you, Scott. Good to be with you.
Hey, man, so let me ask you, the remaining schedule that they have, right? Tomorrow night's game is tough. Rematch is Super Bowl 53, whatever you want to call it. And then, you know, they got, an easy game with the Jets that they'll cruise. But the last two games at Seattle and then against Murray in L.A. against Arizona, and they, you know, obviously they just beat them by 10 in Zona. Now they'll get them at SoFi. I mean, at the end of the day, those are three tough games of the four. And I know they're in first now, but how tough do you think that schedule is? I think it's pretty brutal.
It is. And that's why it was so important to stack up the eight wins that they did. I mean, they ran through the NFC East as they should have early in the season. And picked up some good wins along the way. Everybody knew the second half of the schedule was going to be much, much tougher than the first half. That's why it's important to be 8-4 right now, not 6-6 or something like that, because otherwise you're looking at a real uphill battle. So it's going to be tough. The Arizona game, I wouldn't look at that as a win just because they beat them last week. Kyler Murray looked like he was a little banged up. He didn't look like himself. I got to feel good about Cliff Kingsbury. He's going to be putting a lot of time into trying to find ways to move the ball against the Rams the next time. So I'd expect them to look much better in that game. You know, New England, Bill Belichick's going to give them a real tough game tomorrow night. You saw what they did to the Chargers last week, just decimated the Chargers offense. So you know he's got something for the Rams too. And then Seattle, always, doesn't matter, any year, any matchup, that's always a tough game. So, yeah, you look at the Jets and say that's probably your ninth win. But you might have to get to 10. You probably will have to get to 10 to win that division. So they're going to have to, win at least one of those other three games.
And I think they will. I have to ask you, you know, I've been saying this on the TV show that I do, that I feel like this is just me, that I think they blame, I don't know, whether it's just fans and, you know, media, whoever. It seems like everything gets heaped on Goff when they lose. It's all about him. And, you know, 2 weeks ago they were shredding him for his performance. And then he comes back and beats Arizona, and then everybody's nice to him again. I actually think he's a good quarterback, and I think they're a good team. I think they're very capable of winning the division and going into the playoffs and being a problem for anyone with their defense. I like their receivers. I like their quarterback. I love their coach. Why is it that Goff gets so much blame when they lose a game? Like they treat him like, in my opinion, they treat him like Carson Wentz. I mean, Carson Wentz actually sucks. Goff gets the job done, and he still gets blamed for everything.
You know, the funny thing, Scott, is he hears it so much from Rams fans, too. Like, you can kind of understand around the league, like, okay, you want to take shots at somebody else's quarterback. But, wow, he hears it a lot, even from his own fans. And I got to be honest, I don't get it either. You know, a lot of it is expectations. Scott, you know, you're the first pick in the 2016 draft. That comes with a certain status. People think you need to be the best in the world. You got to be a Hall of Famer if you're the number one overall pick. And then the other thing is the Rams gave him that huge contract earlier than they needed to. I mean, they locked him up. They had the reasons for that. A lot of it had to do with the market. These contracts never go down. So that it was reasonable for them to say, hey, we're going to lock this guy in when we can before these salaries go up even higher. So they did it a little bit earlier than they needed to. And I think that upset some fans that they really gave him that huge money, maybe without letting this play out a little bit more. But yeah, I really don't get it, Scott. I talk to fans all the time. I interact with them online and, you know, social media and that sort of thing. And you know, Jared Goff is a fine quarterback. Is he Patrick Mahomes? No, he's not a guy who's going to just take over a game and win it for you, no matter what's going on. How many of those quarterbacks are out there? I mean, other than Patrick Mahomes, you know, Russell Wilson, you can put him in that category. You're talking about maybe two or three quarterbacks in the league who can just really put an entire offense on their shoulders and carry it. That's not Jared, but that's not what they want him to do. That's not the position that he's in. So, yeah, he takes a lot of heat, and then things get quiet, like last week when he performed about as well as he possibly could, really.
Right. It's just unbelievable to me. He's throwing it around 68% completion. That's not good enough, apparently. He's already thrown for over 3,300 yards, 17 touchdowns. He's been sacked a few times. Who hasn't been sacked a few times in the NFL? What quarterback? I think he does the job. It's unbelievable to me. Now, does McVay and the coaching staff have utter confidence in him? Because I heard him, you know, he said, I put my big boy pants on. I can take the heat. I understand. I have to be better when they lose. I think he owns up to his, you know, misgivings and bad performances. And I don't think that there's enough of them, you know, he's not consistently bad like Wentz. I keep saying Wentz because he's so awful, or half of these other guys. I could go on and on about bad quarterbacks, Trubisky, and, you know, don't get me started. I'm telling you that, like, I don't think he has that many bad games to take the heat that he gets. Does the staff feel that way about him, or do they like what he's doing and believe in him 100%?
Yeah, I think they do. And you know what? Sean McVay took this job in 2017 knowing what he had in Jared Goff. I don't think he would have taken that job even then if he had any concerns. Sean's no dummy. Yeah, I'm sure he spent plenty of time studying tape. I know he sat down with Jared. He knew what he was getting. He knew the skill set. He knew what he could do, what kind of offense he could design around Jared Goff. I don't think Sean even takes that job without full confidence in Jared. Now, the interesting thing, Scott, is Sean did call him out. You're alluding to it there kind of publicly, which is very unusual for Sean to do. He's not a coach who's going to single out a player and say, hey, this guy has got to be better. He's very much a team guy. He's very much a me guy, you know, saying what he needs to do better. And the reason he did that, Scott, I think is he wanted to challenge Jared a little bit. Jared did have some problems with turnovers, period. He turned the ball over 10 times in those four games between interceptions and fumbles. That was not good. We can say that, you know, independent, we can say that clearly. That was not good. And that needed to be cleaned up. Yeah, and Sean pointed that out. He said, hey, our quarterback's got to take better care of the ball. And I think he wanted to see how Jared would respond. I think he knew how he would respond, but I think he wanted to see it, if he put it out there publicly in a way that he usually doesn't, and just see, okay, how's this guy going to process this? How's he going to bounce back from it? And I think you saw. I mean, he didn't make any real mistakes at all last week against Arizona. He was very clean. He didn't turn the ball over. Put it where he needed to be. So I think that there's a consistency issue there. You'd like to see it more from week to week. The ups and downs are there a little bit with Jared, but all in all, I don't know if you're a Rams fan. I mean, how many other quarterbacks out there would you trade for if you could trade straight up? I don't know. There's certainly a few. There's a handful, but you know, talking about the 32 teams in the league, I don't know. I don't know. At the end of the day, I don't know how many you'd want to trade straight up, even if you could.
Right, like, you know, one of the things that I was intrigued by that Belichick was talking about McVay, and you know more than I do because you're there every day watching him and covering him, is that Belichick, because, you know, people, do you remember when they were calling him McVay a genius? And I actually thought it got a little cheesy. I was like, this is ridiculous that he's, you know, a genius. He's smarter than everybody. Yeah. He's the greatest mind in the history of the NFL. He remembers every play of every game, his entire life, all this other nonsense. I'm like, wow. I mean, he's really brilliant. He should have gone to MIT or something. And then I'm thinking to myself, so then I hear Belichick say, so I'm catching on here of what I think of his brilliance, is that I never saw any brilliance when he got his ass beat in the Super Bowl, okay? I saw he looked like an idiot. So here's the thing. I think that what Belichick said the other day about the way McVay disguises his plays at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, that their play calling and disguises of plays, he said all of their plays look the same. You can't read their offense, yeah, like knowing what the play is going to be. Is that the uniqueness of his brilliance that I've been missing out on and that I could finally agree is a reality?
Well, Scott, I agree with you in the sense that I don't know whether there's any true geniuses. You know, look, Sean McVay came in with something. I think coaching is all about adjustments, and then it's adjustments to those adjustments, and then it's adjustments to those adjustments.
Right.
I don't think anybody comes in with, you know, where they've just figured out football, and nobody else is ever going to top them. That right. Just doesn't happen. Sean McVay came in with some great stuff in 2017, 2018. People started to adjust to him. He had to adjust back, and that's what good coaches do. You know, you give what you can give, you take, and then you try to adjust back. But to answer your question, yeah, I think it's not only Sean, but it's those receivers too. And they brought in guys. They signed Robert Woods out of Buffalo when Sean came in. Everybody kind of went, Robert Woods, you know, why are you giving this guy this kind of money? He's not a top producer. They drafted Cooper Kupp in the third round. People went, Cooper Kupp, he's just a slow little slot receiver. You know, what's he going to do in the NFL? But what these guys do is exactly what Belichick is talking about. They can do anything. You can line them up. They have no you know, skill sets to where, you know, oh, okay, this is, they can only run this route or they can only run this play. Those guys can do anything. I mean, they can beat you over the middle on one play, and then they can turn you around with a double move and beat you down the field the next. Same with the tight ends. I mean, a guy like Gerald Everett, even Tyler Higbee. I mean, these guys, again, they can stay in and block one right down, and then the next they can shed a block and get down the field. So that's what makes it difficult is, yeah, they line up in 11 personnel. They make it all look the same, but there's about, you know, 50 different variations when that ball is snapped. So that is what makes them difficult. But it doesn't work unless you have the personnel, the people to run it. And that's what they've done a real good job, is kind of marrying Sean's image, or that his vision for that offense, with the players who can get it done. And that's been the real, real good. That, if you want to talk about genius, that's been the genius of it, is the ability to marry those players with the scheme.
Well put. I got 45 seconds, Rich. Do you like them in this game tomorrow night against Cam Newton and the Pats? And I got to tell you real quick, I think the defense, a lot of those guys have played great up and down that defense, to be honest with you. Fuller, there's been so many guys, in my opinion, that have stepped up and made plays. You know, Johnson, Kaiser, they've been incredible. But in that secondary, Williams, beyond Ramsey, you know what I mean? There's so many guys. I know I only got about 30 seconds. Yep. Do you like the defense, and do you like them to win?
Yeah, I like the defense. They got a couple injuries. Michael Brocker's game time decision. They got a linebacker game time decision. That could swing it a little bit if those guys play. But the Rams defense has just been lights out. I do like their ability to keep them in this game. I think it'll be pretty low scoring. I do see the Rams coming out on top, but I think it'll be a little bit of a dogfight, maybe like 17-13 or something like that.
All right, Rich, great stuff. Enjoy the game. We'll talk again maybe during the playoffs because I think the Rams are headed there. Always appreciate you for coming on the bench. Keep up the kick-ass work on Athletic out in Lipstick City.
All right, thanks, Scott. Talk to you later.
All right, Rich Hammond out in L.A. with Athletic. It's Pharrell on the bench. Pharrell on the bench. Anyway, that was cool. Rich Hammond out in L.A. getting ready for that game. I'll ask you, Carver High, am I crazy that guy, Goff, takes way more abuse than anyone I've ever seen that's, you know, 8-4, whatever they are? When you're winning and you're leading your division and you're, you know, getting the job done overall, like, people act like the NFL, that's the problem. Like, remember when I joked with you about when your team was 8-3 and you were like, we didn't look good at all today, real sloppy, this, that. And I'm like, in the NFL, I told you, I traveled with the Steelers every game. I did it. I was on the team. I was on a plane. I heard it. This is what they talk about in the NFL. It's real simple. They don't care how they win. They don't care if they had 7 fumbles. If they win the game, you win the game. It's no different than that election. You can talk all you want about how corrupt it was or whatever else. You lose. It's simple. You lost. It's over. You win or lose in football. There's no, oh, man, they won, but, boy, they sure look bad doing it. Not in the NFL. In the NFL, anything goes. So you know what I'm saying. And I joked with you about your team. Like, you're winning, but you're not satisfied with the wins? Like, what's wrong with you? So in Los Angeles, the guy wins. They're 8-4, and he takes more shack right than anyone I know. I mean, honestly, he takes abuse.
No, he does. I agree with you 100%. And I think that there's a lot of people, and some of it is kind of true, but that's not his fault or McVay's. I think that McVay is smart in the aspect that he knows Goff's limitations and the things he does good and the things he does bad, and he scripts his game plans to make Goff succeed as much as possible. That doesn't make Goff bad quarterback. It just means that McVay knows how to get the most out of him. And that's with coaching. That's with any good quarterback. The coach helps get the most out of you. So I don't have any issues with that.
Do you think that that line's scary, right? We'll come back and talk about it. It's 5.5. And I'll see what Carver High thinks of that Patriots getting that wood, if they're going to win or cover.
Build digital-first customer relationships with Salesforce Digital 360. Connect every marketing, commerce, and digital experience on a single platform. Innovate fast with easy-to-launch sites, campaigns, and apps. That's more relationships, more revenue, more return, and more success. Salesforce Digital 360. Hear from our customers at sfdc.co/digital360.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.